I was looking at the Election Day exit polls, and they have proved completely there is no response to this that has any possibility of having credibility, none whatsoever. The Election Day exit polls found that 78% of those surveyed were very or somewhat worried about the future of the economy. Two-thirds said they believed the economy was getting worse. I'm going to give a failing grade. We know what the economy is doing. We have the figures. I'm going to give a failing grade to the administration on selling the economic recovery that we have seen, the moderate economic recovery that we have seen, including the jobs growth. I'm going to give an F, a failing grade, to the administration. This may have been the worst job ever of an administration in power of failure to sell what is going on in the economy. I mean, come on. The election polls are what they are. The exit polls are what they are. 78% very or somewhat worried about the future of the economy when we just had two back-to-back quarters, the fastest in many, many years, when we've added over 200,000 new jobs on average every month this year. Two-thirds of those surveyed say they believe the economy is getting worse. So this administration gets a failing grade, and therefore they deserved to lose this election. When you fail to make your case, you deserve to lose an election. Another reason they deserve to lose the election is they passed a health care bill, and then they ran away from it in the midterm election. They passed the so-called Affordable Care Act, and then they ran away and hid from it in the midterm election. Therefore, they totally deserved to lose that election. They got what they deserved. They don't deserve any sympathy at all. I also wanted to point out that the underemployment rate remains way too high. The underemployment rate is 11.5%, way too high, still in double-digit territory, just totally too high. That includes those working part-time who prefer full-time. That's that 7 million plus we talked about. It also includes long-term unemployed. That's the underemployment category, along with the unemployed, the regular unemployed, plus those categories I just mentioned. That's the underemployment. 11.5 is way too high. And that certainly has been a negative in the economy. I did see something which certainly was disturbing this past week, and that is this idea that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are going to ease rules on mortgages. And when I saw this story, I thought to myself, well, wait a minute. Isn't this what took the economy down in 2008? This kind of irresponsible lending practice? Well, here's what they're talking about doing. They're talking about lowering the down payment requirement to 3%. Now, how ridiculous is that? How absurd is that? If you buy a $100,000 property and you put down $3,000 and the property goes down 5%, you're underwater. You owe more on the property than the value of the property, like right away. This could happen in a matter of weeks or months. So when I saw that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are talking about easing the rules on getting a mortgage and lowering the down payment requirement to $3,000, unbelievable is the only word that applies. Only a few years after the housing crash of 08, they talk about doing this. You've heard me on Money Talk. We're in our 29th year of saying it. What have we said? 20% down. 20% down. That makes a good down payment on a property. 3% down? You must be joking. These are the people that are running the government. What can I say? I wanted to share with our Money Talk listeners a communique I received from a couple in Southern California. They're in the greater Los Angeles area. Therefore, they are listeners to the great KABC Radio Los Angeles. I wanted to share some of this communique with you. We get a lot of these, and this is one I wanted to share because it really is a good summary of the kind of feedback we get on the Money Talk broadcast. And the couple writes, "Dear Bob, I've been a faithful listener to Money Talk since 1987 when I had about $20,000 in my 403B. I worked for the police department in Southern California where I live, and my wife worked as a librarian for the city. Additionally, I subscribe to your newsletter and also Money Talk On Demand." They go on to write, "I frequently hear listeners call in to give you a detailed account of how they achieve critical mass. You have probably heard many such stories, and we have, and many have called those stories in. But briefly, here's my story. Retired from the department that I worked for in law enforcement and went to work for a firm as a VP of corporate security. Since my wife and I were working, we did not need the monthly retirement income, so I rolled it into a Vanguard IRA. I rolled my 403B into a Fidelity IRA, and my wife eventually retired and rolled her 457 into a Fidelity IRA. Over the years, we invested in real estate too, acquiring some rental properties. And at this point, the rental properties, as well as our residence, are paid off. We have not yet tapped into IRAs or other investments. Combining our IRA and non-IRA investments, we have a net worth of over $5 million. Real estate equity exceeds $1 million. And I'm sure that qualifies as critical mass, and yes, for sure, it does, except maybe for the Donald. They go on to write, quote, "By utilizing the principles we learned from you, we've been successful investors and have no money worries. We now want to enjoy life more and start focusing on charitable giving." They go on to write, "We think we know enough now to manage our assets for the rest of our lives." And that communique is a great summary of the kinds of feedback we get from people who have been long-term listeners of the Money Talk broadcast and have put into practice the many things we have talked about that you can do to make a difference. You're not only making a difference for yourself, in many cases you're making a difference for your family. We've talked about them so many times. Controlling your expenses, minimizing your investment expenses. You don't have to be spending thousands of dollars a year. If you're your own personal financial manager, you don't have to do that. You maximize those tax-privileged accounts, as that couple did, all across the board. Maximize those tax-privileged accounts. They might be 401Ks, 403Bs, 457s. In the case of that couple, 403Bs and 457s, and probably a 401K once he went to that private firm. In addition to that, diversifying your investments. You don't put all your eggs in one basket. You put together a diversified portfolio, and certainly as you're entering retirement, you're going to have a balanced portfolio. You properly allocate your assets. Always thinking ahead. This couple was always doing the quantum leap exercise, thinking ahead to the future. All of those things on their way to the land of critical mass. I congratulate them. I'm sure they know who they are if they're listening. And all of our Money Talk listeners that have put those sound investment principles into practice. I mean it when I talk about becoming your own personal financial manager. Because it's a life-changing moment when you commit to that. Yes, you go down the learning curve. Yes, you learn how to do it, just as that couple did, and they mentioned how they did it. You do all of those things. But then look what happens. You have this magnificent gift for the rest of your life. It's a personal gift. You can handle your money. And that means also you can let the sharks go their separate way. rather than take a bite out of your wallet. I'm Bob Brinker. This is Money Talk. We're heading out to Daly City, California, where Douglas is on the line. Douglas, welcome.
Hi, yeah. My name is Douglas. I have some money. Let me just put my phone off for a second. I have my money in the Thrift Saving Plan account, and I'm a member of your newsletter. I follow Model 3. So just wondering, should I take out the money from the TSP and put it in the Vanguard and follow those funds, or let it be in the TSP funds and just put the percentages accordingly?
Well, I think that you might have the ability within your plan to essentially follow the same idea as that portfolio. For example, you could do a consolidated form of Model 3, and that would be, for example, using an index fund for your equity exposure. What kind of index fund exposure is available to you?
Well, in the DSP, they have the F fund, which is the bond fund, the C fund, which is the common stock fund, and the S fund, which is small cap.
Well, I think that if the fund is overall diversified, you want to look at the specifics of the funds. If it's overall, if you can buy an overall diversified fund that'll give you total stock market exposure, that's what I'm talking about. Total stock market, Wilshire 5000 type exposure.
Yeah, that's a key fund.
If you could buy a fund like that, I think you that takes care of your equity allocation if you want to stay within the plan. And then over on the fixed income side, I'd be looking for something, if you can find it there, with a short duration, something that will not expose you to a lot of interest rate risk. Appreciate the call, Douglas. Let's get Woody on the line. Woody is in New York. Welcome to Money Talk.
Hey.
Hello, Woody.
Hello.
Welcome.
Yes, sir. How are you today?
I am well. You are on Money Talk. What's up?
Listen, we have just sold a building here, our home, for six figures, and we are in the senior age. And my question is, where is a safe place to put this money so we don't lose it our age up to?
All right. Do you have any – you certainly don't want to lose it, and there are plenty of safe places for it. We'll talk about that. Now, do you have any tax liability on this transaction?
No, not at all.
No tax liability. That's kind of unusual to sell a building and have no. You sold it at a loss?
We did.
Okay. So there's no tax there. Okay. So you have money. How much money?
$300,000.
$300,000. So, okay. So you know what? As for now, while you're in this position right now, you could put together a short-term ladder of fully FDIC-insured certificates of deposit. And
mm-hmm.
that would mean the money would be safe because it would have the FDIC backing. It would earn a very low rate of interest, but it would be safe. And then it would come due on a periodic short-term basis while you're trying to decide what to do with it. But if this is money you want to keep as a reserve, then I would start out with a ladder of CDs.
Okay.
Appreciate the call.
Thank you very much, sir.
1-800-934-2221. Yeah, that's always a good starting place. Okay, I have this $300,000. I don't really know what I want to do with it on an ongoing basis. I'm in retirement. What do? I have this money sitting here. Boom. You place it in fully FDIC-insured short-term CD ladder. The money is there. It will be there. It'll earn a little interest. But more importantly, it's safe because of the FDIC guaranteed. And there you go. You're all set. Then you move forward and you decide, okay, what place in my overall asset allocation do I want for these monies? How do I want? You might want to simply incorporate these over time into your asset allocation mix. For example, if you're a Model 3, which is a balanced investor, you might eventually want to just incorporate it into Model 3. We're heading out to Sacramento. Welcome to Money Talk.
Hello, this is Cecily.
Cecily, it's good to have you with us. I did not want to mispronounce your name.
Well, I want to tell you, Bob, I have been a listener to your Money Talk since the very first Super Bowl Sunday broadcast.
Wow.
And my husband and I have dutifully followed your recommendations. And many, many years later, we're happy to report that we have reached the land of critical mass.
Now, Cecily, tell me, what is that? What does that mean to you and your husband to be living in the land of critical mass?
Well, it means that we have a tremendous amount of investments. We have paid off real estate, and we have the freedom. We own a business, and we generate a lot of income from our business, but we're free to do whatever we want, whenever we want to. We can go where we want. We can buy what we want. We can give what we want, and we're not constrained. And we love our business, so we stay in it because it's fun, and it does something for our community. So it's a wonderful place to be. But when I first heard you talk about it, I could picture what that was, but I never really thought, you know, 25, 30 years later, that I would be in it myself.
Now,
and
actually,
I'm so grateful to you.
Well, thank you for that wonderful description. And actually, Cecily, you'll often hear me say there are no alarm clocks in the land of critical mass. But what I should amend that to say, for example, in your case where you're still running your business because that's what you choose to do, you're kind of like that Warren Buffett type person. You like to continue to do what you're doing because you enjoy it so much. So you might have a few alarm clocks around, but all of the alarm clocks are there because you want them there.
Absolutely.
That's a big difference. Correct. That's a big difference.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's a great description, and so many of our listeners benefit from hearing you describe it, Cecily.
Well, it's a wonderful place to be. But I've got some questions for you. Okay.
Let me tell you what, Cecily. We're going to have to take a quick break. We will return with your inquiries. We go back to Sacramento. Cecily's on the line. Cecily, thanks for calling. What is your inquiry?
Well, we have a net worth of about $4 million. $1 million is the value of our business, which includes a couple $100,000 worth of cash we have on hand. A little over $1 million is in a paid-off primary residence and a rental home. And then we have about $750,000 in IRA accounts, $150,000 on my husband's IRA and in Model 3, Model Portfolio 3, and $600,000 for me in Model Portfolio 2. And then we have a little over $1 million in non-IRA investments, also in Model Portfolio 2. But I have about $250,000 cash I've kept on hand, and I'm wondering about whether we need that, whether we should plow it back into Model Portfolio 2, or as you explained in the last caller, laddering CDs. I can't see any situation where we really need it. And but with dollar cost averaging, I understand the concept. I'm just not sure with an amount like this, how long would you take to dollar cost average that back into Model Portfolio 2? Over what time frame?
Let me ask you a question, Cecily. In listening to your breakdown and where you are in your life, I would have to ask this question. What percentage of your financial assets, let's forget about the real estate. We'll put that in the real estate category. Let's talk about stocks and bonds and cash. What percentage of your stocks, bonds, and cash is in the stock market?
Well, most of it is in Model Portfolio 2. So that
portfolio is a stock market portfolio, and
right.
it is not designed for approaching or in retirement. And you know,
now I'm 58 years old.
Yeah.
My husband's 86 years old.
Yeah.
So
I would say I would rather I would rather see you moving in the direction of a balanced portfolio. I really would. I mean, you have your critical mass. You never ever want to put yourself in a position where you could lose your status of having the critical mass, and
right.
You do that through diversification. I would be moving more and more in the direction of a balanced portfolio, and that might mean that you would not be adding to your stock market holdings since you're already heavily in the stock market.
So move to Model Portfolio 3 for
I would be moving, yeah. Well, I would be getting in the direction. Certainly that's going to mean you're not going to be buying any more stocks.
Right,
but
right.
But in addition to that, I would be gradually getting yourself, and you've certainly had the benefit of one of the greatest bull runs of all time, and get yourself into a position where you could be more in a balanced portfolio. A balanced portfolio would serve you very, very well because, I mean, moving in that direction, because with a balanced portfolio, you could convert your financial assets over to a 4% withdrawal rate. That would give you a hefty amount of annual income. And that income in a balanced portfolio would come from cash dividends on the stock mutual funds, interest on the income mutual funds, any capital distributions that were made. And if that added up to more than 4%, you certainly could reinvest that in the portfolio then. But that's what I'd be thinking about, Cecily.
And what about what do you see in mind for just cash?
As I said to the prior caller, I mean, you have the investment letter. You know that we have an income portfolio on page 7. If you choose right now that's yielding about 2.75% in terms of its current yield. Now, if you choose not to go there, I think the other option that I would look at would be a short-term ladder of fully insured, fully FDIC insured CDs. I would either go one way or the other, but I mean, I'd be comfortable with either one of those approaches. Congratulations on the job. Very well done, Cecily. You have definitely moved to the head of the class with that one. Our toll-free line, 1-800-934-2221. Terry is on the line in West Virginia. Hello, Terry.
That would give you a
Terry, can you please turn your radio down?
Okay.
Go ahead. What's up?
I wanted to find out, since you have a historical perspective with your model portfolio, I want to know if there's any comparison between the enactment of the Social Security Act and the Obamacare.
Not as of now, because Social Security, of course, has been established for a very long time and has taken its place in the society and in the country.
Yeah, but the Republicans were beating the drum.
I understand, but that was a long time ago. That drum has long faded out. There is nobody with credibility in Washington today that wants to terminate the Social Security system. So, and I'm not talking about efforts to privatize portions of it. I'm talking about terminating, ending it. There's no voice, credible voice in Washington today for ending the Social Security system. So that drum roll has faded out long ago. Whereas today, the politicians are beating the drums heavily on Obamacare. And I think that one of the things that was fascinating to me in this last election that was deservedly lost by the losers, they deserve every ounce of loss that they got, they fully deserved by the way they conducted themselves. They ran away from a bill, the so-called Affordable Care Act, a bill that they pushed through on a party line vote. They ran away from it in the election. Now, here's what happens when you run away, and I was just talking to Robbie about this. When you run away from your own legislation, you're basically admitting to people that you have nothing to run on. And they ran away from their own health care plan. So they were stating by doing that, they were inferring by doing that, that they were ashamed of it, or they knew it was a mistake, or they knew it was a disaster. And that's why they lost.
Or they're the wrong politicians.
That's a separate question. Who's honest and who's not? I mean, you know my opinion. I've already expressed my opinion on who's honest and who's
not. Yes.
Yeah, you got it. There's a direct hit, Terry. We have the best government money can buy. We have politicians who are, in many cases, craven politicians who are bought and paid for. They're bought and paid for. Now, how can you prove that? The way you prove that is when you look at a plebiscite, and the result of a plebiscite in a given state. And when you see that goes against the predominant view of the politicians, that's when you know the politicians are bought and paid for. That's as you know it. Now, if the politicians are saying, no background checks, we don't want background checks. They recalled one in Colorado because she wanted background checks, right? If the politicians are saying no background checks, we don't want those, but then the plebiscite passes with over 60% as it did in Washington State, in favor of background checks. There's an example right there of the will of the people, right, giving the country back to the people, the will of the people versus the bought and paid for politicians. Nothing could be more obvious. And that's why we have the best government money can buy. Unfortunately, we have too many craven politicians whose views are for sale for campaign donations or whatever it is they take. And they take these positions which are not the will of the people. So the country is not in the hands of the people. It's in the hands of the money people. That's what we have. That's who we are as a country today, our government today. It's bought and paid for, in my opinion. It's clear as day to me. This is Money Talk. Dan is with us, listening to the great KSFO Radio San Francisco. Hello, Dan.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello.
Hi, Dan. Welcome.
Thank you. Is this Bob? Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
So thank you for your time. I've been listening to you for about 20 years when I bought my parents' business back when I was about 28. And I started at that time investing about $2,000 into our IRAs for my wife and I. And that's grown well over $600,000 today with our 401k. And we've been very fortunate. Business has grown well. Our income has grown well from, you know, roughly $100,000 to $250,000 this last year, over $700,000. We have three kids. I started Roth IRAs for them, and I have net worth somewhere around $2 million. The challenge I have today, though, with the business and growing the business and looking at doing some other things in the business is trying to manage all these investments I have. And I've been introduced to some financial planners, and it just feels like I need some assistance in help managing these Cadillac problems that I've come into. Things like tax planning, insurances, investments, other opportunities, business transfer and such. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I think that there is a category you could interview, and that would be what is known as fee-only. I think fee-only is a category where basically you're paying the individual for input, for recommendations. But that individual is not involved in the implementation of the recommendations, which gets you away from the commission structure and the risk of a conflict of interest. In other words, is there a way for you to get this kind of input without having a conflict of interest? And the answer is, I think that the best way to do that is going what is called a fee-only person.
And
a person will charge you an hourly or a project rate, but they won't take commissions, which means there can't be a conflict of interest on the recommendations that are made, and that is huge.
Okay. And, Bob, just would that be somebody locally, or would it matter that they'd have to be local to us? Could we look even further out?
I think there are two possibilities here. I think one possibility is that you deal there in the Bay Area. The other possibility is if you inquire of a very, very large company, a Vanguard-type company, and see whether they can be of any service in this regard. Now, that is basically a no-load fund family with very low expenses, and so that gives you some protection with reference to this business of recommending commission, high commission products and vested interests. So that's another avenue you could inquire about, or you could inquire locally.
Bob, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dan. Good to hear from you. 1-800-934-2221. That is our contact number. Money Talk comes your way each and every weekend talking about subjects financial. And we certainly have had a lot of subjects to talk about on the program today because things have been moving quite fast. We're looking at a stock market that is trading at its highest level of all time. Even as we speak here this weekend, we are looking at the highest price levels of all time for some of the major indexes. One of those indexes would be the Standard & Poor's 500 Index, which is trading at 2,031. Another would be the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is trading at 17,554. So when you look at the S&P 500, look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average, you're looking at record levels in these markets. And you're also looking, let's take the S&P 500 index. This is an index that has essentially tripled in the last 5 years, 8 months, 5 2/3 years. Now, there are not many times in the history of the market that you can say that you have seen basically a tripling of a broad index, such as the S&P 500, over a period of 5 2/3 years. And yet that is what you have seen in the S&P 500, as it has risen to the 2031 level. Now, that has implications. For example, that means that a lot of you have portfolios that you might want to check at the beginning of the year, because the beginning of the year is a good time to do it, because if you take gains in the beginning of the year, they don't show up on the previous year's tax return. They show up on the next tax return. So one good time to take a look at a portfolio, if you think your portfolio is out of balance, you may have too much in any one stock, you may have too much in an asset class. One of the ways you can do that is by taking a look at that, for example, in January. And you might want to take a look in January and bring your portfolio, your overall investment portfolio, into better balance by doing it that way. And that is a good time of the year to do it, as I say, because it's not going to have an impact on the previous year's return. Now, another thing you might want to be thinking about as we move here through November and move toward year end is making sure that your tax situation is maximized going into year end. Now, you know you're allowed to take up to $3,000 in losses, if you have net losses, against ordinary income. That's a tax-saving measure right there. But you also can take losses to balance out gains. And in many cases, you can simply replace the security you are selling with a similar but not identical security. And when you do that, you get to eat your cake and have it too. Because in that situation, you're putting a loss on the books to offset gains that might be on the books. And then in addition to that, you're replacing that security with a similar but not identical security in order to retain your market position if that's what you choose to do. But certainly the time of year to look at this is as you move into the final several weeks of the year. Now, there are various mechanisms you can use to handle this issue of maximizing your tax situation at year end. One of them, as I just described, you make a sale, you buy at the same time, you buy a similar security but not identical, therefore you essentially retain your market position. There are other things you can do, though. One thing you can do is you can double up a position. If you have 100 shares of IBM and you want to continue to invest in IBM, but you have a loss, because IBM has been a really weak stock with what the company has gone through management-wise and business model-wise. If you have 100 IBM and you want to take a loss, then you could buy another 100 IBM, hold it for 31 days, and then sell the old shares. And if you sold the old shares, you'd be able to take the loss on the old shares, and you would retain the new shares in order to maintain your position, and you would eat your cake and have it too. You'd have that IBM loss on the books for tax purposes for 2014, but at the same time, you would be retaining your position because you would have purchased 100 IBM 31 days before you made the sale of the old IBM, and so you'd be having both sides. You'd have your tax loss and you'd have your position. Now, the other thing you can do does involve market risk. And that is you could sell your 100 IBM to take a tax loss, hypothetically, and then buy it back in 31 days. But there is market risk there because in 31 days, when you would buy back your position in the IBM, there's always the possibility that the stock could be higher. If the stock is higher in 31 days, then you wind up paying more for it than you sold it for, which certainly counts against your benefit of taking that tax loss. Bob Brinker here, more to come, and our guest segment coming up as well. Stay with us. It's the flight of the Starship Money Talk.